This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Luke Cage. I'm a good man, food on the table, working two jobs, ready, willing, and able. Check, good man, I'm having fun, got no kids in the love of the Lord. Check, good man, I'm a 9 to 1, never did time, maybe just once. Check, good man, and I put it down, wanna see it twice, check, but check. I put it down, check.
How could you ever?
Hello and welcome to the much anticipated special edition podcast focusing on the Netflix series Luke Cage, produced by Marvel Entertainment Studios folk. My name is Ron Richards and I'm with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
You sure you don't mean Mike Romo? Or?
Oh my God, it's Josh.
It's all three of us are here to talk about a Netflix series, which I don't think has ever happened before, has it?
And I think I finished it first.
You did? Oh, you asked? Because what happened was, is that here's the arc, is that it came out, I started watching it, I made it about halfway through, and I said, hey, I'm about halfway through, and Connor says, I haven't even started, so I stopped. And then out of nowhere, Josh says, I finished. And I said, I didn't even know you started. So, and then here we are. Then finally Connor finished, and now we're together, and we're going to be talking about the latest installment in the Marvel Netflix direct-to-Netflix series, Luke Cage. Connor, who's got the cast and crew rundown. Who do we need to know about?
Well,
before we do that, spoiler warning, we're going to talk about what happens in the show. You've clearly watched it already, and you just want to know what we think about it. But in case you haven't, you might want to press pause, go spend 13 hours watching television, and then come back.
So this is the fourth season and the third series of this Netflix deal. We'll have Iron Fist next, and then followed by the Defenders All-Star Edition. But we've had two seasons of Daredevil. We had Jessica Jones, and now we have Luke Cage. And yes, this series was created by Chio Hadare Coker, Ray Donovan, Almost Human, Southland. So he's got a pretty good TV career record as a producer. Right. 13 episodes. We first met Luke Cage back in Jessica Jones. He was a fairly prominent member of that series. One of our favorite things of that series, I think, Ron.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had, like, the whole time I was thinking that this took place before that, but later it turned out it didn't.
That's one of the things
that when we talk about the criticisms of it, was that it was, at least for me, it was when you start watching it, it was hazy on where it was in the timeline. Because, yeah, you're right. At first, I'm like, oh, does this take place before he bartended at a bar in Hell's Kitchen? But no, it's after. So if it's after, why doesn't he refer to the fact that he got blown up a couple of times and all?
Well, first of all, it was literally exactly as it appeared in the timeline of all the other things. So,
yeah.
You just happened to wonder if it was something else.
Right, yeah.
It's not like he really talked about himself all that much, so...
Did he own the bar, or was he the bartender?
He must have been the bartender because
I thought of him as the owner.
I thought he owned the bar.
Me too. So did I. But he clearly just walked away from it to go sweep floors at a barbershop.
Well, he had to get out of the Hell's Kitchen because it was hot. It was hot there.
So it's too hot.
He went 40 to 50 blocks north.
much cooler north of 125th Street.
Mike Coulter, Luke Cage, and I think
Connor.
Yeah,
the great Mike Coulter. Give him the respect. Yeah.
So this series was rocky. Well, I mean, let's just jump right in. I thought of all the series so far, this was, I don't want to say the worst because I enjoyed watching it, but this was the least well done.
However, I disagree. Yeah.
I think far and away it was the least well done. But however, I think this had one of the better casts of all this.
Agreed.
I thought they had some fantastic actors, some I'd heard of, some I'd never heard of. I think Mike Coulter is the most compelling lead they have.
Yeah, by far. I was going to say of all the main characters, he was easily the most compelling. And in a way, I really think that he happened to, I don't know that any other thing that this has happened with, he actually, I think, helped clear it up what they were trying to do with Luke Cage in the comics for me. Like, I think he did it so well that he made those comics work better for me in retrospect.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
No way.
Well, he's got a whole, like, heroic but reluctant thing mm-hmm. that I think Coulter played really well, but I don't think came across in the comics, but it was clearly being attempted. So when he was, like, in charge of the Avengers, you know, it was like somebody who's great had greatness thrust upon them, but they weren't really seeking it and they didn't really want it, but they knew that it was the thing they had to do. And I think that this encapsulated that better than say like Bendis did in right. those comics, if that makes sense.
He rides a really great line where he's tough. You have no doubt that he's tough, but you also have no doubt that he's good. You also have no doubt that he will do what he has to do.
Right.
He plays there's a lot of things going on with Luke Cage and Mike Coulter. I mean, he looks like a nice guy, but he will also throw a truck through a building if he has to.
Right.
And he has an innate goodness about him. I think that's yeah. the reason why everyone's drawn to him.
And he's immensely handsome.
And he's super handsome.
I mean, to give the full background to our listeners, the love affair with Mike Coulter began for me and Connor in his role as Lamont Bishop on The Good Wife.
Yes.
Where he was a handsome drug dealer.
That is such a comic book name. You say Lamont Bishop, and I'm like, oh, that's a thug from Hell's Kitchen.
Right, yeah. No, he was a very well-dressed kingpin, but he was fantastic in that. And what's interesting is that, like, those are really the only two things I've seen him in. I know he's been in other stuff, but those are the only two things I've seen him in. And just to see the subtlety of which he played both those roles,
yeah.
it shows that he's the real deal. He's really good. And it makes me lament the division between Marvel Studios,
yes.
between movies and TV, because I would love to see him up on the big screen as Luke Cage next to Chris Evans. You'd like that? I think he could totally pull it off. Because I think
that
he is solid.
Overwhelmingly throughout this series
yep.
was that I was really annoyed that we would never see him in the Avengers, because
yep.
he's a great character, he's a great actor, he could no doubt hold his own in that group, and
yep.
it's just a bummer that there's that dumbass turf war in Marvel.
And which also, like, you know, and I try not to read other critics and all this sort of stuff to see, but seeing some of the, you know, I was poking around to see what people thought of it. And, you know, aside from the crazies over there, which I'm not going to acknowledge, you know, there were folks who said that he was a weak part of the show. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, to be the main character and be the guy in the you know, on the cover page of Netflix when they show it's him, you know, it's like he's the lead character and he's got to do everything.
And he carried it. I mean,
he carried it like really well. Yeah, yeah. And you got the sense, like you said, Justin, you got the sense of the reluctance. You got the sense of the responsibility. You got the sense of the he's a good man, you know, and you got the sense of him wanting to do the right thing, but also wanting to just not be bothered because, like, just let me be me. I'm not a hero. He kept on saying that was a theme throughout the whole show, was him, you know, the reluctant hero until he finally embraces it towards the end.
See, this line is, I think it's tough to explain. It's not I don't want to be bothered. It's,
right.
It's almost like it's not my place.
Yeah.
But somebody has to stand, right. you know.
And going back to what we were talking about with the timeline and Connor with your comment about it being the worst of the show so far.
Well, and I caveat of that. Worst makes it sound bad. I just think it was the least well
no,
put together.
No, I interpret your comment by that by like a matter of inches, right? I just think that
structurally it was had the most problems. Like, it got really boring in the middle, and
that's a bigger issue. Well, before we get to that, what I was going to say was that, you know, the problem with where it took place and all stuff like that is that I feel like they introduced him and Jessica Jones, and they gave us a touch of a backstory with this Reva, with his ex, with his dead wife, right? Yeah. And you got a sense of something, and I thought that they would build upon that in this series, but instead they gave us something completely different, which I don't really feel the tight connection to him and Jessica Jones as I had hoped for.
One of the things I didn't like about Luke Cage in this was that they took him away from being a Harlem native,
yeah,
and made him from Georgia. One of the things about Luke Cage, the thing in the comics that makes him so powerful, is he is the hero of Harlem, and he's a native son of Harlem. And this series was as much about this Marvel version of Harlem as than anything else.
Yeah, but at the same time, like by the end of it, you know, like he
was is, but just that. For me, like the character, it's, you know, it just, I get that every character in Marvel came from New York, and they're trying to make the change that, but like especially for Luke Cage as that neighborhood, it just felt like an odd choice to take away that origin from him. It wasn't right. A huge deal. I just something that irked me slightly. That didn't really take away from my enjoyment.
So, which I think this is fair.
I think that Connor, you are right in terms of quality or evenness or whatever. But I will just, this was my favorite of this year of the shows.
I had a lot of fun watching it. When it worked, it really worked.
I didn't finish Daredevil season two. Like I just stopped caring.
Right. Well, I think that the issue with this series is the same issue with Daredevil season one and two, and with Jessica Jones,
yes.
And what we've talked about a lot, which is in the manner of which they're telling these stories. 13 episodes is too long.
This one could have been 6.
We've said that about all of them. We've said that exact same line. This could have been 8 or 10 episodes. This could have been tighter. This could have been, you know, like, and there was just, you know, like it just, when I would sit down and watch an episode and the runtime would be 1 hour and 5 minutes. And I'm like, well, why? Like, it doesn't, you know, like, there was so much breathing room and there was so much slowness and honestly repetitiveness. The show really breaks up into two story arcs.
Yeah.
And both story arcs, there are at least 2 episodes in there that could have been 1 episode where it's just the same thing happening over and over again.
So let's break it down. So Luke Cage is working in a barbershop, in Pop's barbershop, sweeping floors. He's also a dishwasher at a club in Harlem. What was it called? Harlem's Paradise?
Something like that. Harlem's Romance.
The club was run by Cottonmouth. Cornell Stokes is a crime boss. His cousin is a city councilwoman representing Harlem. And he gets caught up in Cottonmouth's dealings and takes him out halfway through the series. And then we switch over to Diamondback, who is his half-brother. And once Cottonmouth went away, my level of caring went way down. I didn't think Diamondback was at all a compelling villain.
Well, and it was the kind of thing where it was the ascension of Cottonmouth's cousin, yep, sister, you know, Mariah, played by Alfred Woodward, right. Her ascension as the villain.
Yeah.
But
then Diamondback comes on and he's kind of way more over the top and silly. And first of all, I think Mahershala Ali, who plays Cottonmouth, who is probably going to be nominated for Academy Award this year for Moonlight.
Yeah,
is an amazing actor, and every time he's on the screen, I couldn't, you know, look away. And once he went away, you lose this really strong piece of the cast. And nothing against Eric LaRae Harvey, who plays Diamondback, but it wasn't as compelling to me as the Cottonmouth character.
I didn't like Cottonmouth that much. Like, I liked the performance, but I just thought, I don't know, there was something that didn't quite click with me. I felt like he wasn't. I don't know. I think he was playing the line, the sort of gray line, a little too closely. But I thought the same thing about Diamondback. Once he showed up, I was like, "What is?" It got really cartoony.
Yeah.
Well, it's
but
so
when
fun.
He
it's
did
so,
show up, so... when he did show up, that whole bit though with Alfre Woodard, I thought she got way more interesting when she crossed the line fully to the other side.
Getting pushed into the full-on crime, like, you know, up until that point, she could lie to herself and say she wasn't a criminal.
But I liked that part.
And then she had to cross the line, but I just felt like he was so cartoony. It was kind of like,
well, it's funny that you say that, because I agree with you completely. I thought Cottonmouth was fantastic. I thought he was great as a villain and set up, you know, there, and you had this dichotomy between Mariah, who's trying to, you know, not reform but renovate Harlem into, you know, to bring it into another golden age, and the public policy aspect of it, and meanwhile She's being funded by, you know, an underground crime, you know, that sort of thing. That was really, really interesting. And I liked the way they seeded Diamondback through the first six episodes as this
yes.
puppet master, this, you know, kind of a bigger problem. Talking about the villains, on the aside, the dude who played, even though the name was stupid, but the Shades guy.
Theo Rossi.
Fantastic.
I loved him.
He's great.
I can see how people wouldn't like him, but I liked him a yeah. lot.
He was yeah, the I only... He was the only actor or character from Sons of Anarchy who I didn't completely hate.
Yeah. So I thought he was great, but then they dispose of Cottonmouth, and I was annoyed at that. I was surprised. I was like, whatever. I'm like, all right, we'll see where it goes. Then they introduce Diamondback, and I love the actor who plays Diamondback. He was Josh. Do you remember him in Boardwalk Empire?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Pernsley in Boardwalk Empire. He's fantastic. And then I was like, all right, cool. Now we're going to get at it. And then it just becomes, I'm secretly your half brother and I hate you because our dad liked you better. And I was like, oh, come on. Like yeah. I wanted the big story play to be about Harlem, not about shitty revenge.
And also you mentioned that they spent the whole first half talking about the shadowy figure in the background that Shades worked for.
Yep.
Diamondback, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. Maybe they're setting up the next season, or whoever this guy is, he's going to be a badass. And he shows up, you're just like, so it's this guy?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't really fulfill the mythos of this super scary crime boss that everyone would hear his name and get, you know, just hop
right.
to it. And it was just
after. And that's the thing, is that the combination of his portrayal of just conversations with people, the way the actor just carried himself, and then you factor in which I thought was, you know, everyone's all about the Easter eggs and all the crap, but I thought that was a nice little nod to have him have access to hammer technology, which is Sam Rockwell's character in Iron Man 2.
Yep.
So you had a little idea of a little more oomph behind it, right? In terms of weaponry, it just fell short because if he wants to control Harlem, then yes, you got it. You know, but it's not just that, you know, daddy liked you better. Like, that just, it was so disappointing.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree.
Well, also, you had, I mean, the high bar for these things in terms of villains was, you know, originally Vincent D'Onofrio, who was, I think, the best part of Daredevil. And then after that, David Tennant came along. And so this, after that, was like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, David Tennant, you mean Jessica?
Yeah. I mean, like, that he was like, if he wasn't in, you know, Jessica Jones, I don't think I would have made it.
Yeah.
They, you know, they have the opposite thing here where
yes.
we've said in the Marvel movies, the villain's usually the weakest point. But in these shows, they actually have done a really good job cultivating interesting villains. Or at least really great actors to play those interesting villains.
And I think that's a really good point because, D'Onofrio is great. Tennant has been great, you know, even Bernthal as Punisher was interesting. But then, you know, but this, like, I feel like there was a wealth of villains in this. And it just, and you had so much, you know, you even had speaking of portrayals, the woman who plays Misty Knight, who I thought she was great.
Yeah, Simone Missick.
This was borderline a secretly, it could have been Luke and Misty. Because that's how good she was, and that's how strong she was as a character, which I didn't expect. But I liked how they had what's his name from Pulp Fiction as the dirty cop that worked with her,
Frank Wally.
Yeah. There was a wealth of danger up until it got comical right around the eighth or ninth episode when you find out really what's going on, which is just kind of sad.
Why did Diamondback wear that helmet?
That's the thing in the comics. I love that.
I was googling pictures of Diamondback, and all I saw was him wearing the shirt, the ribbed shirt.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any pictures of him in a helmet. Any drawings of him in a helmet?
I thought the helmet was great. I thought Diamondback's costume at the end was awesome because it was a nod to the comics, but it also made sense because it was the hammer technology and that made him strong. And like I thought all that weaving together was great. I like that.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things we really liked. You just mentioned Misty Knight was great, Shades. But for me, I would have been totally fine if the show had just been in Pop's barbershop.
Yes, agreed.
if we just hung out at Pop's, the old guys were playing chess. Pops doled out wisdom.
The dude with the goatee, who was also in The Get Down, who was also in Mr. Robot, that guy is very quickly becoming one of my favorite character actors.
Ron Cephas Jones or something
he's
like
fantastic.
That. He's in the Story of Us, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic.
This is Us.
This is Us.
He's the father in This Is Us. He's great.
I know, but it, like, you can't tell it's the same guy. And that's why I was like, oh, he's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, and those first couple episodes where they just sort of hang out in Pops, and you know, Pops would dole out wisdom, and then there would be trouble, and Pops would talk him down, and then you know, Luke would defer to. I just thought Pops was great. I thought the whole environment was great. When, and I was genuinely moved when Pops is killed. I was like, no, no, oh.
I thought they did that too soon, to be honest with you.
I did too, because I loved it so much. But then again, that's the point.
Well, no, yeah, it really had power, yeah. And it really, like, I was really bummed. But and I know that that's what moved things forward. But it was one of those things where I, like with Cottonmouth, I was mad that it happened so quickly.
That's good though. That means it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it had actually happened too quickly, you wouldn't have cared.
Right.
So, I mean, I think just that point of the barbershop of the. This show actually felt different than the other ones because it felt like it was actually in a different place coming from a different perspective than my own. Mm-hmm. You know, the obvious thing being it's a story about, you know, a black neighborhood and black characters by a black showrunner.
Yeah.
And those characters were given their point of view and it did not feel like, you know, like white people writing it. I guess if that
makes
sense.
It felt very authentic.
Which to me, because even like some of it, I was like, oh, that's not really my sense of humor. And that's, I was, to me, that's interesting. I mean, like it just made it more interesting than the other shows were to a certain extent, which were written by nerds I know. You know what I mean? Not specifically, but just people like I know. So this felt like fresher to me in that instance. So are we talking about things we like? Because I can tell you the moment where I decided it was my favorite.
Let's hear it.
When Luke Cage met Method Man in the store.
Oh,
that was
the
best scene in the entire series.
That was the best
scene. That was
the
worst.
I was literally just
explaining that at dinner, and I was saying it was like bad 70s celebrity cameo.
No,
it was so cringy. No,
are you,
it was the best scene.
Are you,
in the
they both had mutual admiration for each other.
It was so cringy.
Hello style was my joint.
Yeah. That was really
and it set up that Harlem is a sort of small town.
Yeah, and then they double down by having him do a full rap about him,
which
should
great.
Have been cheesy, but I loved it.
Yeah,
no, I would have been fine. I was fine with the radio bit and the rap. It was just that moment of you know, when Luke, like where it stopped, it put a halt to what was going on, and then he's all smiles and like then the you know the pillow was my jam, whatever, and then he's like. You know, and it goes back to the phone. I literally just rewatched it before the show, and I was like, "This is like it's bad 70s sitcom cameo."
That was the best scene in the entire series by far. I immediately texted you guys saying that it was.
Luke Cage is a bad 70s. Like that's where it comes from. Yeah. I mean, that's what this was. It was almost blaxploitation.
No, but that's no. There's a difference.
Modern blaxploitation.
There's no. I'm not saying it was like blaxploitation. I'm saying it was like a goddamn episode of The Love Boat.
That's
what it seemed like. Not like blaxploitation at all, Josh.
No, I'm saying blaxploitation comes out of that same era is what I'm saying. So if I don't know, it didn't bother me in the least. I laughed because it instantly one of those things about Luke Cage because he's so taciturn, he doesn't say anything.
Right.
But to have like his personality show up, be like, oh, I really like your stuff. Like, and they were both like, and they were also saying like how they were both mutual admiration of each other. I thought it was great. It was, you know, it was fun for me.
It was the best scene. It felt the most natural. You actually got Luke dropped his guard for a second, and it showed that the neighborhood that they always talked about throughout the show, that Harlem was a small town that everyone knew each other and watched each other's backs, even if you were famous, it totally worked for me in that sense. I loved it.
Okay.
I thought it was fantastic.
Fine.
You were wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. once again, Rosario Dawson acts as if she's. Is the greatest actor on the screen.
I don't know if she's good or bad because I love her.
Exactly.
And like every time she's in something and someone has to fall in love with her, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Now that's said,
and
though,
so
that,
how
that,
do you go? How do you go from this to does he actually end up with Jessica Jones now? Because
because that's the thing. The one thing that I did because
yeah,
at
was,
any
was,
given.
Yeah.
At any given point throughout these 13 in our time of knowing Luke Cage in these Marvel TV, you know, we know about him and Jessica Jones from the comics, so we expect that to be a thing. But then we know that he was married to this Reva woman who we got very little about, which is very disappointing in my mind. And then he hooks up with Misty. He, you know, has this several episodes of chemistry with Rosario Dawson's character, whose character name I don't even remember. Claire. Right, so it's just like wow, and like the thing is he's very handsome, and so I'm not surprised, but it did
feel a little weird coming. If this was a prequel, it would have made sense, but coming off of his romance with Jessica, and it's not to say people don't stop one romance and start another one, but Yeah. The fact that she wasn't ever even referenced. They just went through this entire thing. He tried to kill her when he was under the sway of the Purple Man. And, you know, you think it'd be fairly traumatic that he was involved with this woman and he almost murdered her. And it wasn't even... And I get they wanted this to be standing on its own as a Luke Cage series,
but they referenced it too in the series. I mean, one episode had Trish doing her radio show.
That was the worst part. That was the low point of the.
That was the
low point of the series. That radio show clip where the dialogue was terrible. The line readings were terrible. That was the worst.
So that they had that, and then there was a couple times where they referenced it, like, and then there was that crazy person who referenced it, so it happened, but to have him never acknowledge it, much less to Claire, who was in it.
But even then, you think he would be a little haunted by it. He's haunted by so much else in this series that the fact that he tries to try to kill someone he was involved with, not too long ago, if they're all still talking about those events, you think that would have affected him. I mean, again, I can see it. Fine, they want to make this a Luke Cage show. They don't want to have anyone else in it. But he was so involved in her story.
Yep.
And it was odd to me that she was never even referenced specifically by him in this whole ordeal. Because what happens now? He goes.
That was just one weekend for him. Right. I mean, that's the thing that happened once, like 5 years ago. It was a weird weekend, but.
Yeah. Listen, I don't like to talk about it. My weekend in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And so when they get so it'll be interesting when they get back together for Defenders or whatever happens.
And I fully expect Claire to show up in Iron Fist. And she's like the Netflix show's Coulson. Yeah, she's Coulson, right?
I'll take that every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it was interesting because like the weaving in of the greater Marvel universe and how much is it going to tie into the other shows and the movies. You know, like if Claire says one more time, "I know a good lawyer," like it's like, okay, we get it.
Call him for God's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're still referencing the incident, right? And then like all this, you know, the old references to the Avengers, which I understand that was a big deal and almost destroyed the city, so I'm sure that would have resonance. But then there were times where it does work, like I mentioned, like with the hammer technology and with the, you know, little throwaway comments about the, you know, about the villains in Daredevil, you know, with the Chinese have their own thing going on downtown, and right. You know, like, you know, so it's like it's an interesting balancing act, which I think that this time around was not as distracting and felt more immersive. And I think
it's also the most
of
them. I think they had the most. Yeah. I feel like this is the most times things were referenced in any of these shows.
There was a certain point where they were actually making so many references that they were like pop culture references and stuff that was annoying me at first, and then by the end I was like, all right, that's what we're doing here, and it didn't bother me anymore. So. You know, that's by the time they did, you know, Luke Cage in the 70s look, you know, what do we think of that?
That reminds me. That was my thing. I thought the Luke Cage in the 70s look was fine, because what that does is that gives the nerds what they want. It's a funny little moment and then move on. Right. Like that was almost the perfect way to deal with it.
What
annoyed me was that we went about 8 episodes of everything being fine and normal, and then for some reason, from episode 8 until the end, he's going to say "Sweet Christmas" every 30 seconds.
And you know what? The time it felt the most natural and it worked the best was with Method Man. That was the only time I thought "Sweet Christmas" felt like it actually made sense that he said "Sweet Christmas."
You're right. You're right.
When he said it, I bought it.
But he said it a lot towards the end, right?
Oh, he did. He said it a lot.
You know what's interesting about that is every time he said it, I had to weigh whether it worked. And most of the time it didn't. I was like, I don't hear him saying it. And Connor's right. It was when he said it to Method Man, I was like, all right, he sold it there.
Yes, he did. It was the only time.
That's right. He's right.
I had fun with it. My biggest problems were that I was really into the first like 5 or whatever, and then once Cottonmouth went away, I thought it got really choppy. It took 2 episodes. Wait, he loses his powers. Or he gets shot with the Judas bullet, which tunnels into his skin, and then so I thought he only had like impenetrable skin, but they made it sound like his whole innards were super strong.
Well, so the skin thing falls apart quickly, right. As we've learned in our podcast talking about powers. Like they had to be like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
It's all of his cells, which I thought
to get his powers back, and then meanwhile you know Diamondback's running around being cartoonish. That to me, it was the middle third was really rough.
He was dying for like 2 or 3 episodes or something.
Yep. limping around. Oh, and oh, so yeah, the limping around the city in the bullet hole, like the bullet hole hoodie look got old very quickly. Which also, again, much like both seasons of Daredevil and now this, can we have another display of the superpowers without having the hero have to walk through a building and get attacked by 30 guys?
Nope.
Like they did it again. It was the same. It was that great scene in Daredevil season one that we loved when he was tired, remember, in the hallway, and that was great. And then they did it again in Daredevil. And then now they did it again when he broke into the building to get the safe, whatever, you know.
The point is, and who they're selling it to. I mean, this is what people want. This is the solo right after the second verse in every rock song ever.
It's also their trademark now. The first one got so much attention that they do it with every. It's fine.
But just get some creativity about it. Make it give it something to be unique and different as opposed to just the same thing. I don't know. The other thing I was gonna say was that I thought that I agree with you. The middle part was where it dragged the most, where it slogged the most. But what I thought was interesting about this was that the ending was really weird. I thought, and not in a bad way, but just basically, if you look at we had the big showdown with Diamondback. And that ended fairly quickly, and there was still a lot of show left to go. And you had a lot of kind of wrap up, like when he goes to the police and explains everything and explains it all out.
I love that because they were like, "You're good to go now. We're fine." And then the feds show up. Like the police were just ready to be like, "No, it's fine." And I was like, "I don't think it works that way."
You still threw the cop into the windshield. I don't care what your reasoning was. That still has to be dealt with.
Yeah. And then ostensibly, you know, Alfre Woodard gets away. Like the villain didn't get the loud, bombastic villain got dealt with, but the real villain of Mariah, she got off scot free. Like
that's the lesson in that, Ron.
Yeah, I know.
Always be the quiet guy in the background. But also, you know, they have to set these all up now for further seasons. I don't know that they knew with Daredevil they'd do more of these per hero. I mean, not just in general. And so now they have to sort of. It was very weird, but I kind of dug that it was weird.
Me too. Yeah, I liked it. I liked that it wasn't like every other one. Like, yeah, I thought the ending was unique enough to that because it was different.
I liked that Luke was always reading. I liked that it ended with him bonding with the Marshall about the books he was reading.
Yep.
I thought that was a nice. I mean, that's a comics thing, but it's a nice touch to have run throughout the series.
Yep.
I think Luke is a great character. And they really, he's a fantastic character on the show.
Agriculture really did a great job of bringing him to life. And like you believe, like they sold the importance of Pops and the neighborhood and doing the right thing and all that, and that sort of thing. And then I will say, like, a lot of times I don't love flashbacks, but we got the necessary flashback of Luke in prison with the worst wig and beard, fake beard ever.
That's great. I didn't know it was him. I was like, why are we? Is this his father? And then after all, I was like, oh no, it's actually him.
Yeah.
Because Mums the Schemer was there, which was awesome.
Yeah. But then I really liked the flashbacks about Cottonmouth and Mariah because it gave them depth and understanding of where they came from and who they were. And that made it that much worse when Cottonmouth died, because I'm like, oh, I really, really liked him.
I did too.
Yeah.
I also really liked the music.
I love the music.
The music was great, not just the performers in the club, but they were all fantastic, and that was one of the things I missed that went away halfway through, kind of, although it popped up a little bit once Mariah took over the club.
Yeah, it came up at the end again, that band.
I also liked the use of the score. I know that some people grated on them, but to me it was the Blaxploitation tribute to have sort of a very prominent score behind some of the more... It didn't work all the time. There was one conversation, I think it was at the end when Luke was fighting Cottonmouth, when he tried to talk to him, tried to reason with him, they had a very prominent music behind him. I thought that didn't necessarily work, but for the most part I thought the music really worked on the show. And the club performances were awesome. All uniformly.
Well, I think that was the one thing that, like, when I was talking about it, was that separated this from the other ones, made it different, that made it more interesting, was that it didn't feel like, and I'm guessing a big part of that was the sound. It did not sound like, because every other Marvel thing sounds like every other Marvel thing, and this one was different.
Yeah, it really had the identity of the neighborhood and of like it felt like you were there the whole time for the right reasons, and it was I thought it worked. I'm not a big hip hop fan, and I couldn't tell you what the songs that were used, what they were, but they didn't get in the way, which is the right thing to do.
It was good. It was I mean, I've really enjoyed all these. So when I can say this was the least good, I can. That doesn't mean it was terrible, because I have really liked all of them. But I look forward to more Luke Cage. I look forward to him maybe showing up in Iron Fist. I look forward to him in The Defenders. I look forward to hopefully another series of Luke Cage. More Michael Coulter as Luke Cage. I hope that Kevin Feige comes to his senses and says, okay, maybe we can have some of these guys appear in the movies because they're too good not to, but probably won't happen. But
yeah,
it's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, like, and we've seen the teaser for Iron Fist, which I think looked fine. You know, like, I'm gonna watch it, and then I'll be excited to see what they do with the Defenders and they put them all together. And you know, they've got a nice little thing going here with these Netflix shows. I just, you know, think that, you know, the 13 episode is too long again, and B, and we've talked about this and we rant on it, and it's just that I hate the drop them all at once. I would even go as far to say that I would swallow the 13 episodes a bit better if it was released weekly, you know, but the fact that you're watching them 3, 4, 5 at a time because because the whole binge watching, you know,
people start yelling at you if you haven't, and I realize I've done that mockingly to Josh, but that's just me mocking him. But you know, like, this dropped and I had to immediately go on a work trip for a week, so I couldn't even touch. Yeah. I couldn't touch it for 7 days.
I think that it really. Well, I think there's too much.
Oh wait, Josh hasn't been here for this conversation, really.
No, he hasn't.
I haven't. I think it's too much for a couple of reasons. Like, that show comes out, and in terms of sort of social media or zeitgeist or people sort of just talking about something while it's happening, people talk about it for about 5 days.
And then it stops.
Yeah. And those are the people who have time to watch 13 of them right away. And then it doesn't have a chance to hook you, because the next week, and it's not necessarily just Marvel, but like, I keep turning on Netflix and like, there's a new show at least every week. And I just am like, at a certain point.
There's too much.
Their goal is to have new content, a new series.
I know, but like,
it makes it too hard. But you're right. To me, the biggest head scratcher, and it's not Netflix's problem, they don't give a shit, is that it doesn't have a chance to build up in the zeitgeist. People talk about it for 10 days, and then they move on to whatever's next.
So it becomes really special. It's opening weekend mentality. Really, it becomes really special for a week tops, and then it goes away.
Just fades away. Yeah.
You know, and if you think about, because we sound like old people again, but you know, Star Wars is Star Wars because it was just there.
It built for
2 years.
Right.
You know, and then that never happens again with this constant look over here. Now look here. Now look here. Now look here. And to me, what's funny is that every week somebody reacts like it's Star Wars, and then no one talks about it anymore. And so I get disinterested in stuff because I know that it's just the new shiny thing. And
it also becomes
a
contest who can watch the quickest.
And
it's not about enjoying it. It's about, well, I've already watched 8. Well, congratulations. I don't have 8 free hours on Friday.
I think if they released it weekly, it would be something that keeps people talking, keeps people on edge, and the cliffhangers would be that much more cliffhangery.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would notice the problems with the pacing and with the, you know, not being as tight. That's just me, though.
No, I agree with you. I totally 100% agree with you. Yeah. I think I talked about last on one of our previous shows that you never would have had a show like The Jinx happen culturally if they'd all just put the episodes out together and we'd moved on after 2 days. It just it doesn't have a chance to build up interest. People don't get to talk about it, and then, you know, but that's the way of the world.
All right, so ratings.
We're rating? Do we rate these?
No, we don't rate these. No. Oh.
Are you going to stick with it?
It's enjoyable. It's got problems. I thought it was probably also the worst written, but that's another. I mean, that's subjective. But it's got a great cast who really sell it. So
I think if
you don't have this, I mean, this I'm looking at the list of Luke Cage, Misty Knight, Shades, Mariah, Claire, Bobby Fish. Yep. I mean, Cottonmouth. These are all fantastic actors. Yep. And they really sell it. They really sell it.
The cast was by far the strongest aspect of the show.
Yes.
And but I will say that I will thank them for having a less annoying, repetitive opening credit as the other shows.
I dug
previously.
The opening.
And I would really just like Netflix just to give me a skip credits button or something, because
it skips if there's no opening, if there's no cold open scene.
Right.
It skips,
yeah.
It skips credits.
They did that a couple of times, and it was mainly the episodes that ended with a cliffhanger where the next episode picked up.
Yeah.
But then you do go to another episode, and there it is. It's back again. Ugh. Well, so for all in all, I'm hearing mostly thumbs up with some complaints.
I enjoyed it enough that I didn't have nitpicks about it. I was like, it was fine. You know, it was good. It was fine.
Yeah. It was my problems aside, I had a lot of fun watching it. And the cast is great. It's worth watching.
Yep. All right, cool. So that's going to wrap it up for Luke Cage. We hope the wait was worth it. And then we'll be back here in February for Iron Fist, right?
I believe it's around there, yeah.
Yeah, it's around February, yeah. So
neither confirm nor deny my presence at that.
Well, we'll see. All right, so in the meantime, go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this podcast and you can tell people what you thought of Luke Cage, what you thought worked, what you thought didn't. We want to hear from you there. And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We often take those emails on our regular show, which you can hear every Sunday, comes out every Sunday, where we're talking about the latest in comics and other fun stuff. So until next time, I'm going to wish you a sweet Christmas, and I'm Ron.
I don't think that's the way you're supposed to use that.
You should have done it that way, though.
Yeah, I wish you a sweet Christmas, sir.
And then everyone just gets mad. That's not the right usage at all.
It's April.
Them handcuff me, lady, and walk me through my
own. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.